You are listening to Team Broadcasting.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly. Ready or not.
Sleep, walk away. Those who correlate know the world ain't cake. Jail bars ain't golden gates. Those who fake, they break. When they meet their 400-pound mate, if I can move the world, everyone would have a gun in the ghetto, of course. When you see up and on their horse, kick around, drinking moonshine. I pour a sip on the concrete, put in the seat, but no, don't weep. Why clefts in the state of sleep, taking out the robber.
Hello, 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 Took. Here we are.
Yeah.
The Cafe Mahogany. We discuss Selma tonight. Isn't that exciting?
Yes, ma'am. I'm excited. I saw the movie, and it was better than I ever imagined. Beautiful. So I can't wait. Tonight is going to be a fun-filled hour, so I'm ready to get going.
I am, too.
But before we get started, let me just say something that is very important. I made a genius decision about a year ago, switching from iPhone to Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
Let me officially apologize to the iPhone nation. I am coming back home. Jesus, because Samsung, I don't care what galaxy they from, is not the business.
Well, you know, I'm an Applehead, so I support that decision.
Yes, yes. You're the one that got me hooked, and I'm coming back home. So as soon as I get a chance to go by AT&T, because this thing is driving me bananas.
No, you're a smart guy. Hang out there. Stay with what you got.
Well, let me just say this. I got this megaphone. Bigger ain't always better.
Okay.
In some instances, you might be right. But in this case, no. I think that 6 plus will do me just fine. And I'm going to leave this big old TV screen alone.
Sounds like a wise man. Sound like a wise man. So how was your week, man?
My week, I have been a little under the weather,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I've been battling this cold. So, you know, I consider myself a tough guy, but I think this cold got the best of me.
Well, listen, you got to shake that off. Because who has time to be sick?
Yeah, ain't nobody had no time. For that, what them young folks say? Ain't nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Well, I have had a phenomenal week, and it's just Wednesday.
Phenomenal. Let me know about that.
Phenomenal. Last night, I had an opportunity to get on a virtual town hall meeting. Hashtag Sisters of Selma on Twitter. And it was the most interesting interaction that I have had in social media in a very long time.
Oh, wow.
And you can actually go to Twitter and search hashtag Sisters of Selma to see that dialogue. We had some of the pioneers from the movement. We had current young sister activists participating in the conversation. We had women from in and around Selma that no longer lives there, that still lives there, people that has never been to Selma. It was nice.
Wow. Yeah, I'll have to check in to that.
because I would fall under that category, people that have never been to Selma. And after I seen this movie, I left the theater ashamed that I had never been to Selma. So,
well, you should be.
Yeah. Oh no. Well. Thanks a lot. To dig it in, but you are so right, because you know, I went in to not only watch a movie, but I did. You know, I try to learn something sometimes, and I learned a whole lot, and it was a reminder. And you know, we'll talk about that, my position on that a little bit later, but it reminded me a lot of not only my responsibility, but my levels of accountability as an African-American. So, you know, very, very proud experience, and very deep. So, yeah, exactly. Selma, you are an integral part and the foundation of this country, and it is a must visit if you are of any African descent.
Yes, I agree. I agree with the assessment. You know, some of the sisters from the town hall, the virtual town hall last night, might stop by. They were invited to stop by and share their thoughts with you and I later on in the show. So mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that if any of them are available to come on and talk to us. After we come back from break, Togo will be joining us. That's our producer. And he is from Selma as well. And we are going to get into the meat and potatoes of the movie, of the Golden Globe nominations, the possible Oscar nominations, life in Selma right now. And just exciting stuff, just ready. I am just ready to talk about what we don't talk about. And I tell you, my experience with it, and I know when we go over to do the show after the break, we're going to get into the experiences of our audience, of our listeners, and get people to call in and share their experiences. But, you know, as the host of this show, I'm going to tell you a little bit about mine. I went to see the show, you know, the day it opened. Nationally, because it opened limited for Christmas. And the first thing I did, I got in the car to drive to my next destination with the people that I went to see the movie with, and, you know, we got together to eat and talk about it. But, you know, the few minutes I had alone in my car, I had to call my aunt Velma, that still lives in Selma. And I kind of hate the name, rhymes right about now. But anyway, I had to call her because it was through her eyes that, and her storytelling about her participation in that movement that made it come alive for me. So I have been hearing it all of my life. I heard it again in July when I was last in Selma. And for 43 years, she has told the same story.
Oh,
the exact same one. So when I got in the car and I called her and I told her, I said, Aunt Velma, I just saw the movie. She said, did you? What did you think? She said, I haven't seen it yet. I said, everything you have ever told us about that period, everything my mind could dream up from your words, I just saw it. I just saw it happen.
Wow.
And she was like, wow. So she was like living history to me, you know. I am so proud to have her in my life to share that. My mom was too young to participate, but my aunt certainly brought it alive for me and my siblings and my cousins. And we were fortunate to have her.
Amen.
We were fortunate to have her. So I am excited to get to it. I'm ready to talk about it, talk to Togo, talk to Angela. She can make it. Dario later on in the show, if he can make it. So we're about to take a break here.
All right.
And after we come back, all things summer.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, Kiki and Soup, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Are you a business owner looking to expand your business nationally? Well, join the hottest internet radio network, Team Broadcasting. Advertise your business or organization on this program or others. Choose from a winning lineup: Selma Toro's Baseball, Toro Talk, Bridging the Gap, The Lonely Hearts Cafe, and Cafe Mahogany. We look forward to partnering with your business to help you grow, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally. Contact us for more information, 334-505-1940, or send us an email at yourteambroadcasting.com, 334-505-1940, or yourteambroadcasting.com. We look forward to partnering with you.
Hello.
Yes.
And welcome back, Cafe Mahogany, Tiki, Took, Togo.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome, Togo.
Hey, thanks for letting me join you all and come from behind the booth tonight to talk about this fascinating movie.
Yes, sir.
It was indeed fascinating, Togo. So I got a little reaction from you while you were actually at the show the other day. Tell me about that.
The first is actually the second or third scene when the children are walking in the church. I'm looking at the church and I'm thinking, is this Ebenezer Baptist Church? Because I'm looking at the balcony, the steps, how it goes down, and then the kids are discussing hairstyles and how to part. The young lady's talking about how to wear her hair like Coretta Scott King. And then all of a sudden, boom. And that's when it hits you that this is not like any other movie that you've seen, about, particularly about this era. And at that point, I mean, I literally felt myself crying three times during the movie. Because don't let me take up too much, but I mean, you realize that the people that you grew up with, that you kind of took for granted because you saw them every other week or every other day, you see them in the grocery store, you take for granted the sacrifices that they made, and you don't really realize. And it hurts because, you know, like Annie Cooper, the ones who aren't with us anymore. And then you realize, like, I go by Brown Chapel and I see my uncle's name on that plaque. I hear how Bernard Lafayette talks about my uncle. And, there are things that I and I'm talking about Cleophas Hobbs, and this is Kimba Hobbs' father, Tiki.
Yes,
And I'm like, there's more that we should have done to preserve the legacy of our family members, and to appreciate them and appreciate what they did in the movement. And let me say one more thing. When that scene with the bombing of the kids in Birmingham, in the church in Birmingham, when that scene took place, the first thing that went to my mind was the tragedy, the enormity of the tragedy. The second thing that went to my mind was Condoleezza Rice. Because Condoleezza Rice knew those girls, and her family was active in the civil rights movement, and you just don't know how certain things catapult people to where they are to become, what their destiny is, how things motivate them.
Right, and how things color their perception.
Yes.
how they process things, how it shapes them to become who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing that reached out and touched me at the very, very the beginning of the movie, Togo and Took, is when Annie Cooper goes to the courthouse to register to vote. And the gentleman in the window says to her, "Don't you work over at the home for Mr. Dunn?" And he's asking her about that.
What would Mr. Dunn say?
What would Mr. Dunn say? What, do you know that I worked at Dunn Nursing Home in high school?
And,
so I
and
said, my
I,
mouth
you know,
just dropped.
Wow.
I was like,
yep.
What?
And then it's like, you know, I remember years ago, I was a part of a nonprofit group called Do Something that was in Selma. We had a Selma branch, and we were looking for permanent space, and that facility was one of the facilities that we looked at. So I remember in the movie theater, I text you, you know.
Yeah.
I text you about that, and you told me that you worked there. I was like, wow, wow. The other thing, too, that concerning the buildings and the structures is, of course, we always hear about Good Sam. And too, Good Sam is the hospital that Jimmie Lee Jackson passed in. It was the black hospital during the segregation period.
Uh-huh.
That building still stands, but it's not used right now. And Tiki, I'm telling you, there are certain things like that that we can't let those buildings die. Because of historical, the reverence that they have, the how they catapulted the movement.
Right.
So, I see we've got a couple callers, so I'm going to step back behind the booth and kind of screen them. But you guys carry on the conversation, I'll jump back in.
Okay.
Okay.
So when I'm sitting there watching the movie, right, and Annie Lee Cooper goes up to register, and they talk about Dunn Nursing Home, and it hits me. I'm like, I worked in this place in high school. But from that moment, and that's the opening scene, if you remember, from that moment, I go through this movie reliving memories of things that I had been told about the movement. But here's what's surreal. I know what's happening next, but I'm not ready for what happens next.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, the scene in which Jimmie Lee Jackson loses his life.
Yeah.
The church exploding, the beating on the bridge. You know it's coming.
Right.
But you're not ready.
Right.
You're absolutely not ready.
And it's so amazing that because, you know, you guys have the blessing of being geographically located and that being that national monument of a city, being your environment of your childhood and growing up, you grew up in the middle of that. You talk about something that was surreal and, you know, it was surreal for me a couple of moments. That opening scene when Oprah went up and submitted her ballot and she had everything checked off correctly. And she said, "Well, everything's right this time." And he said, "Well, it ain't right until I say it's right."
Yeah.
And she says, "Well, how many judges are in the circuit?" And she says, 46. And he says, "Okay, name them." So we knew at that point there was nothing that an African-American could do to register, to qualify for registration, to submit a vote. That was one. That was the opening scene. But what was surreal for me, it hit me, and I thought, when they were crossing that bridge, and as you said so eloquently, you knew what was about to happen.
Right.
But I wasn't ready for what happened. And I wasn't ready for the graphic nature, but the reality of what actually happened. In the truest concept, these are actors that we're looking at, but these were not so far generations back of our mothers and fathers who were subjected to the pain of these skull bashings that was going on. And I thought for a moment, and I realized that time, that place and time, was that my mother and father went through this at this time, but still found a way to create me. And I just thought it was just so deep for me at that time, that moment, when I was sitting there in the theater, to be willing to bring a child into that world had to hold a whole lot of hope in those
Right. I agree with that. So, you know, Togo, one of the things, do we have Togo back? I don't think we have Togo back yet.
No.
I'm sorry, you are here? All right, I thought he had come back on. But one of the things for me that
I'm sorry, I'm back. Can you guys hear me?
Now we can.
I'm sorry.
Thought you were back, but
yeah. We have some more listeners. There are a lot of people that are in the banks, but they want to listen for a little while to us to get the context of the show. But when Took was talking about, you know, the bridge and knowing what was going to happen, I didn't want to interrupt him. But one thing that I want to say to that point is, you know, growing up in Selma, you kind of take it for granted when you drive across that bridge all the time, several times a week, several times a day even. But when I actually walked or marched across the bridge the first time, what you don't realize is until you get to the top, you don't see what's on the other side.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
You
right.
don't know.
And I've walked it. That's exactly true.
So when you're walking, when they were marching, it wasn't until they got to the top that they would have been able to see what was on the other side. And then as the pictures show and as the movie shows, they walked down to the foot of the bridge before the charge came. So just
right.
to have the courage to keep going, and you see what's in front of you.
Amen. My God.
And then you're attacked and have to go back.
That's right. And the people behind you.
Yeah, the people behind you, that it's just a whole wave of people that has to turn. You know, they were falling on each other, and it was hard to watch.
And it's a solid 2 miles, two and a half miles to Brown Chapel.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it is.
It's a good little walk
yeah.
back to that church.
It is a good little walk back to that church. Speaking of taking things for granted, Togo, and living in Selma and that whole history, the group of women that I went to see the movie with is a phenomenal group of ladies. They're in my book club meeting. You know, they're well-read, they're educated, they're professionals, and just beautiful people. And we don't live in one another's pockets. We're not those kind of friends. We're the kind of friends that just, you know, we get together for events and book club meetings and stuff like that. And it was shocking, absolutely shocking to me, to sit down at the table with them after the movie, and all of them had assumed that Dr. King was present on Bloody Sunday. And the first
yeah.
thing they said was, oh, I didn't know he wasn't there that day. And it's
yeah.
something that I took for granted. I'm like, what? You know, it's tough. Speaking of taking things for granted, we do.
And then even growing up, you hear that the successful attempt was the third attempt. It wasn't until this movie that the explanation given in the movie that I realized why the second march didn't take place. You know,
right.
the fact that something just didn't seem right. You didn't know what was going to happen. Could they have been surrounded, you know,
right.
by the troopers?
Ambushed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I had always heard there were three marches, but you never really got understood. I never understood, at least, what happened during the second one.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was so reflective in that second one. That one hit me as well because, you know, he's marching with, you know, we have the clergy along with us,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the second march, and all of the other supporters who are, you know, non-African American. So we have a mix and a representation of the nation. The face of the nation is walking across. And, you know, when he kneels down and prays and decides to turn back around, and the anger that the people had that they didn't proceed, it's not acknowledging. Now, we don't know what it was that God told them to do. But, you know, we put him up front as the leader, and it was just amazing to me how, you know, we know what happened on the first march and how many people were eager to be willing to stand, not knowing what we were going to walk into, because I do believe, just as you said, Togo, that looked like an ambush to me. You know, but it's amazing at how people changed their support and how angry we can get if it doesn't go how we foresee it.
Because you didn't have
them out there. Real quick, guys, for the listeners that are just tuning in, we're discussing Selma. We're discussing the movie. We're discussing all things Selma. And if you want to get in on the conversation, the number to call is 516-595-8113. Just a quick reminder of what tonight's subject is about and where we are in the discussion. We'll take a break right here, and we will return.
Are you a business owner looking to expand your business nationally? Well, join the hottest internet radio network, Team Broadcasting. Advertise your business or organization on this program or others. Choose from a winning lineup: Selma Toro's Baseball, Toro Talk, Bridging the Gap, The Lonely Hearts Cafe, and Cafe Mahogany. We look forward to partnering with your business to help you grow, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally. Contact us for more information, 334-505-1940, or send us an email at yourteambroadcasting.com, 334-505-1940, or yourteambroadcasting.com. We look forward to partnering with you.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, TCN Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Okay, welcome back to the Cafe Mahogany, where Tiki, Coop, and Togo are discussing Selma, the movie, the city. If you would like to talk to us live, it's 516-595-8113. So, you know, Took, before we went to break, we were just talking about how phenomenally this movie was made. It was very well directed. Unlike a documentary, it gave you a very real look inside the movement. There's documentaries has narration, and they give you the facts. I have to say that in this movie, this is the first movie for me. And I've seen a lot of movies and documentaries on the period. This is the first time that Dr. King appeared human.
Right.
And everything I've seen reflective of the period, all the movies I've seen about his life, the biopics, what have you, he's always seen so bigger than life, so iconic.
Mm. Yeah, the
Selma
fact that
reminds you that he's a man. Go ahead.
Yeah, it touched on his infidelity. You know, the one of the most powerful scenes was you knew that at J. Edgar Hoover and President Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, were planning this and plotting this, because J. Edgar Hoover admitted his strategy was to mess with the household, as he said. He knew the marriage was on shaky ground. But but then when the tape was played, and I don't want to call her Coretta because she's, you know, Mrs. King, said she asked him, did he love the others?
Oh, right. Exactly. Right.
Did he love the others? That's that question. And
right.
he said
right.
no. So he validated the fact that the
right.
tape could have been accurate by admitting that there were others.
Right.
The other women.
Right.
Right. Right. And then you know what? What you know? What was I saw unique in this? And Tiki, you talked about that. We've seen other films on the Reverend and the Good Doctor and. But I've never seen one where it addressed what we know is the reality. Whenever you're in a position of leadership, there's always going to be the questions, the doubt, and even the times when we're hit by friendly fire. And this was the first time I've seen in a Martin Luther King movie where there were those that were on our side and behind closed doors that questioned, that openly questioned his direction. You know, and that and I was proud, you know, to see that the movie, even the way it ended, in the sense that we all know what happened, but I don't need to see Dr. King shot again. You know, it ended with him preaching at the pulpit, you know, in front of the people. And, you know, of course, we had the words at the bottom that told us about with each person, what they went on to do. But it wasn't necessary to graphically show King getting shot. And I thought that was important that that was omitted.
Well, first of all, this wasn't a King movie. The movie,
right.
He was in the movie, but the movie was about Selma. So
that
was first and foremost in my mind, that the movie wasn't just centered on him or his legacy. It had more to do with his contribution. There's an outstanding article that was written by the Root staff back on the 10th of this month, called The Five Things You Should Know About Selma Before You See the Movie. And I thought that was excellent. The five things that they point out that you should be aware of before you sit down to watch this film. And the very first thing that they point out is that Selma residents were working on voting rights long before King decided to go there. And
that's
the other thing that, when I am talking to people that have never been to Selma or not from Selma, that is the thing that they don't know.
Yeah.
That is the thing that the movie taught them.
Yep. And then that's one of the things, too, as Tuke was talking about the fact that there was this push in the leadership, the struggle in the leadership that was going on behind the scenes. We, growing up, and Tiki, correct me if I'm speaking for you erroneously, but growing up, we always heard the stories that SNCC was there and SNCC was doing this and the students were doing this.
Right.
They were doing voter registration. We always heard those stories. And then the documentary on the Freedom Riders kind of touched on the friction between the student movement versus Dr. King's movement. So it was very interesting to see that played out in this movie. The other thing that was interesting was Malcolm X. We always heard growing up, Malcolm X was the film. Malcolm X was at Brown Chapel right before he died. Malcolm X was walking. Brown Chapel is surrounded by the GWC projects, George Washington Carver homes. And, and we would always hear Malcolm was walking through the projects right before he died. He came to the projects. He visited the projects. And to see that played out was refreshing. because
it
to
was
hear
refreshing.
The stories growing up and to see it on the screen, you know, was good, like validation.
It was like validation. The thing when my aunt told us about this period while we were growing up, one thing she was pointed out was how heavily involved in the schools, the high schools in the area was segregated at the time. There was Parrish High, and it was a white-only high school, and there was R.B. Hudson High, and it was a black-only high school, and how heavily involved the students from R.B. Hudson High were in not only just that from Tipton, from Dallas County, from Marion, from those high schools, that those students, how active they became in the movement, and it was kind of the catapult for their parents to stand up and say, hey, you know, like, what is my child into, you know?
Yes.
So
I need to jump back and check on the callers. Callers, if you're on the line, stay with me. I'm going to jump on and check on you all in a second. But, Tiki, I just don't want to miss the conversation. It's so great because and hopefully some of the callers can jump in on this because you're right, because I'll tell you this a little bit. My grandmother, Amanda Hobbs Jones, she's deceased now, but she was a teacher at Tipton back in those days, and even in Tyler, which is about – Tipton is in the community Selma, which is on the other side of the bridge from Selma, and then Tyler is going into Lowndes County, Whitehall, maybe about 3 miles past where Tipton is, that area, 3 to 5 miles. So my grandmother taught in the county, and my uncles, Cleophas, Nolan, Willie Hobbs, they were participating in the movement, and they would use her car. And the sheriff's department had her license plate written down, and she was getting all these tickets mailed to the house, and they were threatening she was going to lose her job as a teacher. And that was one of the things where the students stood up in the movement because the parents couldn't, you know, they were threatened that they might lose their jobs. And then one thing that the movie didn't talk about was the whole Camp Selma. Tiki, do you have stories about Camp Selma?
I've heard stories about Camp Selma.
Yeah.
I have heard stories about Camp Selma. It's one. I mean, all of that, Togo, like you said, we grew up hearing about so much of these details that I think just over time we just kind of took it as read, right?
Yeah.
You know, it happened. Yeah. We know all about it. But I don't think we were ever conscious of a lot of people really know about it.
Yep.
Right.
So Tuk, and then I'm gonna jump off and check on these callers. But Tuk, there was a camp outside of Selma that they would arrest the students and round the students up and keep them, like a concentration camp called Camp Selma. When they would arrest them, they would take them out there, and they were out there for days at a time, and the parents didn't know where they were.
Hold on, guys, I got to tell you this, and it shouldn't be funny, but the way it's told in my family is hilarious.
Okay.
So real quick story about Camp Selma. All of my aunts and uncles, well, I have one aunt, and my four uncles were old enough and did participate in the movement, okay? My mom was the youngest. My aunt would walk her home to my grandma, and they would go downtown or go over to the church to participate. And my grandmother in those days, she was one of the few people in her community fortunate enough to have a television. And my youngest uncle, he's older than my mom, but he's the youngest male uncle, was missing for a few days. And the family was worried, and everybody was like, where's Randolph? Where's Randolph? So my mom says she's sitting in front of the television one day, and, you know, there's this news crew, Togo, had made it to Camp Selma, right?
Wow, yeah.
And they were telling the people that they had restrained there that, hey, if we let you go, you have to promise to go home, right?
Yeah.
The camera, my mom sitting in front of the TV, so she said, all of a sudden she starts screaming for my grandma. My uncle is on TV stirring pinto beans, y'all, and being interviewed by the news lady. He's cooking in this camp. He's on television cooking at the camp. And it was like, sir, if you know, we let you out of here, do you promise to go home? This is on film, you guys. This is actually on film. These
wow.
are news. This is an actual film that exists. My uncle tells them, you know, he and his buddies are being kept there, that if they can't let all of them go, he has to stay to make sure his friends eat. He has to stay and cook. And,
right.
you know, in the family, we just died last night. Oh, well, Uncle Randall, what were you thinking?
Bye.
But.
Gotcha. Because the parents
don't
know.
So
no.
don't get out and call us. But, yeah.
Gotta get these
it is. Is.
And the parents didn't know, the families didn't know if the relatives were dead or had been lynched, you know.
Right. They did not know what had happened to my Uncle Randolph. And that is the God's honest truth. And one day he's on TV stirring pinto. He was the cook at the camp.
God bless Randall.
Yes. Amen. May he rest in peace. He's no longer with us. But,
amen.
Yeah, he was the character. He was really the fine guy in the family, but not taking himself or anything too seriously.
Amen.
But they interviewed him, and that's how they found out where he was. That's how my family found him.
All right. We have a caller on the line?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Togo is going to bring her on now to speak with us. This should be our – she's a Selma City Councilwoman. Her name is Angela Benjamin. Angela, are you on?
I am on, yes.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Cafe Mahogany.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
You're very welcome. So we're going to ask you the question we've asked everybody that's come on tonight. Did
okay.
you see the movie, and what were your thoughts?
Yes, I did see the movie. I made it my business. As a matter of fact, I saw it more than once because of this child of mine that's 13 years old. I had to go see it more than one time. Let me tell you all first what he said the first time he saw it when he came out. He said, "Mom, you know what I'm glad about?" I said, "What are you glad about?" He said, "I'm glad they didn't make this movie about Dr. King, and I'm glad they didn't surround it around his assassination." He said, "I know all about that."
Right.
Okay. I was like, wow, and that was just a few statements from a 13-year-old, and I was like, wow, that is a good point.
Because we have been bombarded with that, and not that that's a bad thing. I'm not being negative.
Right.
Don't get me wrong,
right.
But. That's all we see, you know?
And it's easy to find. That information is easy to find. You can
right.
find that information anywhere you look. You can go into a search engine, or you can ask a random person on the street that can tell you that part right there. It's just easy to find. And I was just wowed that he said that piece right there. He said he did not want to see that, and he was glad that they did not put it in the movie and surround it. By Dr. King and all of his doings.
Right.
But
Councilwoman, you are so right about that.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, Tiki already knows my position on you know these movies and these depictions of you know times of us as African Americans in this country. So that's a whole nother show. But you know, I was so excited about this particular movie because it showed the positivity in the movement,
uh-huh.
and you
uh-huh.
know, and it's and it is so refreshing to my ears. That, you know, specifically to hear that a 13-year-old testified
uh-huh.
that. You know it that the visions of our people being seen beaten and that is solely the history is tired, you know, and
right.
Selma is such a breath of fresh air, so
right.
You know that's so great to hear. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I was excited to hear that, but getting to I did a little summary myself on Facebook on. And I guess I'll create a page because so many people are encouraging me to. But, again, I said I saw it several times. My son volunteered this weekend here in Selma, so he saw it several times as well in between volunteering. But one of the things that I like a lot about the movie, let me say that first, even though some of the details may not be in line in the direction that they marched and all those kinds of things, but the facts were on point. And I like that.
Yes.
The other thing I like is that they did show SNCC. You don't get to see that often, the young people and how they were organized, how they were already organized. Before Dr. King and his crew came on the scene, these young people were organizing in 63 and probably before. And I know that my mom was jailed in Camp Selma before Dr. King even came on the scene. She was in the, I came in on this phone line when someone was saying that they had a relative out there cooking. Well, my mother's job and her role was, when they were locked up, was singing. And her singing kept spirits up in Camp Selma. So that was her job. That was her role. Everybody had a role to play, according to the stories given by my mom. Everybody had to do something in Camp Selma.
In Camp Selma.
Absolutely. So I love that the young people, my mom went to R.B. Hudson, of course, and so I love that the young people, even though we would have liked to have seen more of them, they were actually in this movie, and we know the role that they played, and they were a force to be reckoned with. And Ava was very brilliant in compressing all of this history into 2 hours and so many minutes. She was brilliant at what she did, and I like that about this whole thing. I can tell y'all something, though, and forgive me if I repeat myself. I was not ready for the beginning of the movie. I knew what was going to happen. I knew exactly what was going to happen when I called them. I hope there's nobody on the phone that hadn't seen it, but so I won't tell all. But I knew what was going to happen when I saw the young people talking and coming down the stairs. Hey, we know what's about to happen. But the way it happened, I was not ready for at all.
Mm-hmm. I knew what was about to happen. I'm with you on that same. I knew what was coming, and it happened, and I still wasn't ready.
Right, and I still was not ready, and it was so beautiful. What? Somebody had said it on Facebook before. It was so beautiful how the writer imagined what these young girls might have been talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. You know what, Councilwoman Benjamin, you know the thing that reaches out and touches you about this movie?
Mm-hmm.
The intangible, how very well directed this movie
was
made.
Right.
Absolute
intangible. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just comes out at you.
Yeah. She should have walked away with an award, in my opinion, the other night. I'm grateful that the song For Self,
Glory.
The famous song For Self, Glory, has gotten that award. But I just feel like somebody, including the director, should have walked away with an award that night. All of the actors were very good, from George Wallace to the president to MLK to the striking Coretta Scott King.
Didn't she?
All were good.
She, when I saw her, I was like, oh, the resemblance was just, I was like, wow, the casting did a phenomenal job with casting her in that
part. Phenomenal
job.
Her classiness exuded. Through the film, you can see her classiness. She was a true woman. She was every woman on there, and she had
She was study. Every woman. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was telling our listeners earlier, Angela, about the round table that happened on Twitter last night with the Sisters of Selma, and how phenomenally well that went, and just the participation, the knowledge, the rich history, all of this is an exciting time. This is a very exciting time.
It is very. We had a council meeting, and I missed it. I did go in. And I followed the thread from beginning to end. And I think I may have asked a couple of you all some questions or agreed with some things that you all have said. So I was glad that the hashtag was created so I could easily find the conversation that I had missed.
Right.
One thing that was interesting to me in the movie is the whole Marion dynamic. There are certain things that happen in Marion, which is a community that is about 15 to 17 miles northwest of Selma. And ladies, correct me if I get some of this wrong. But the whole dynamic of the march that took place on the night that Jimmy Lee Jackson was killed and the fact that he went into the cafe, I was literally in the movie theater Googling that story to figure out the proximity between the cafe and the church, and all of that. And then, and then the other thing too, that was interesting in listeners is when Martin was having a conversation with Mrs. King, when they were having, Dr. King and Mrs. King were having their conversation at their home in Atlanta, and he told her the decision had been made to go to Selma. She made the statement, "Those are some good folks down there." What did, what the story didn't tell you is that Marion was her hometown. So Marion, 15 miles northwest, is where Coretta Scott King is from. And then the other thing is that Ralph Abernathy was born in Linden, and Ralph Abernathy's wife was from Uniontown.
Absolutely.
Which is another community about
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that. Not everybody's going to know what Togo just said, and not everybody's going to find the flaws that we, you know, those of who are on the phone from Selma or near and dear to Selma, you know we found all the flaws. Y'all know we did.
Yep.
Yes, we did.
A lot of people are not going to know that timeline like that. Even with the, I think it was Tamika that I was talking to and Sisters of Selma on Twitter, that concerning the part where it made it seem like Dr. King was there for Bloody Sunday, and also somebody else who was thinking that this whole Jimmy Lee Jackson thing started and ended in Selma, Alabama. It did not.
Right.
So that's, and that's a movie. It's not a documentary. We know this. And so that was a sensational piece of it. It was sensationalized a bit. And we know that. We on the phone know that.
But, I, you know, I understood that, and I think it's important for anybody watching the movie to understand that it's not a documentary, that the director, to get as many details into the movie as possible, did take some creative license, and it was tastefully done, and that as a people, I encourage us to not be lazy.
Right.
To not be trifling when your personal education. Pick up a book, you know, read some history, get to know. And then another thing that a lot of people don't realize is that everybody already had the right to vote.
Yes,
but what was happening, what was happening in that area of the country, like what we find happening today, those rights were being circumvented. They were being suppressed.
By rules and restrictions.
By rules and restrictions. And that is the thing that made the Civil Rights Bill necessary.
You know, say your ABCs backwards, say the alphabet backwards, and all of this kind of thing. They acknowledged that the law was there, but they put rules in place. They put blockages in place that kept you still. You couldn't vote.
Like the brother said, in the movie, you had to know somebody in the county to vouch for you. And there wasn't no blacks in the county.
Did you have to go
and vouch for you?
A registered voter had to vouch for you.
Right. A registered voter had to vouch for you, and there was no black registered voters.
And then when you, if you got past that, you had a poll tax. So you in this country, in these United States of America, you did have the right to vote, but some of our southern states made that voting right an absolute impossibility at the county, city, and state levels.
Absolutely.
So this bill had to be drafted and put in place to say, hey, stop it. It became necessary in these United States to have a, you know, a bill drafted for a sector of the citizens to enjoy the rights that should have been theirs without it. I read a lot, Councilwoman Benjamin and Took, I read a lot about LBJ and how there are people saying that his legacy was smeared in this movie.
I read
all of those things, and I listened to podcasts and all of this before I saw the movie, right? So I was thinking going into the movie, like, oh my goodness, what did they do to LBJ's legacy? Only to get in there and see the movie and have it be exactly like I have heard all my life that it was.
Absolutely.
I didn't see anything in that movie that was devastating or even impactful to LBJ's legacy. He was president that had other things on his plate. And
if anything, they did him a favor by being nice.
Right. He made it plain. I have other things going on. I don't want to do this right now. This is not forefront for me. And MLK is standing there saying, but I need you to make it a priority. And he's saying, but that state has a governor. He needs to make it a priority. You know, and it's not like LBJ. I never had the perception that he didn't want black people to vote, right?
Right.
I had always heard that his hand had to be guided or forced, if you will, to draft in that bill. Okay?
Right.
But it was never given to me in the form of he didn't want black people to vote. And that was, you know, hearing the noise before you see the movie, you would think here was a president that wanted to keep black people in oppression. And that's not what the movie portrayed at all.
Not at all.
Presidential administration, you have priorities. And he was simply saying, MLK, what you got going on down there? This is not a priority for me right now.
Right. Can we do this later?
Can we do this later?
And you can't play Pontius Pilate. You can't play Pontius Pilate and just wash your hands of the situation and think that you're not responsible.
Right.
It was on his watch just as it was on George Wallace's watch.
Right, exactly.
And I felt that was so powerful that he told George Wallace, and I know this is probably some creative license here, my legacy is not going to be tied to this foolishness you're doing.
Let me tell an interesting story about George Wallace, and some of you might know my aunt. My aunt, Janice Hobbs Towns, she's wheelchair bound. When she was 15 years old, she was vacationing in Pennsylvania visiting my uncle Cleophas Hobbs, who was living in New Jersey at the time. She took a trip to go sightseeing in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and was injured in a car accident that left her a double amputee and burned on 80% of her body. Our family couldn't afford the medical treatment. So this is around 72, 73. George Wallace, let my family use the state jet to get my aunt and grandmother and family members from Alabama, from Selma, to South Carolina, where she was being treated in the burn unit at the University of South Carolina Hospital.
Wow.
And that's how I ended up being born in South Carolina instead of Selma, because my mother had to take care of my aunt while my grandmother, you know, was working in Selma teaching. But that is just interesting. Growing up, our family had an interesting relationship with George Wallace, because I even remember as a high schooler in Selma, my aunt would go to Morrison's cafeteria that used to be in the Eastdale Mall, and George Wallace would be there eating his lunch. So it's like there's that connection too. So it's interesting, again, where the movie shows you those sides of people that you hear about, that you see about, that you walked around, and it's just interesting and good to see those people portrayed.
Yeah, you brought to mind when you're saying this. First of all, I think I might have had the opportunity to meet that aunt you're speaking of this weekend. Is it possible that she came to the theater?
Definitely possible. I'll check. But she was also at Jubilee the year that Vice President
you
Biden was there. Exactly. Yes, she was with me
okay.
there. Yep.
Okay, I think I got a picture of you all.
Yep.
But
yes.
you reminded me of a point in the movie where the president, LBJ, was talking to Wallace, and he said, "Man, I don't know." He said, "And I'm these are my words." He said, "Man, you're around here fighting for the poor and all this. How come you won't give in on this right here?" He told him, and Ava, again, does a good job on her to show that part of it. And just you saying what he did for your aunt means
right.
that Ava did her research, because the president told him something to the effect, "Man, you're around here fighting for the poor all the time. Why won't you let up on this one thing?"
Right.
When he was sitting in, he was seated, and the president was standing, and they were talking. I believe he said that something along those lines to him, and so Ava did allude to the fact that he was fighting for the poor.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, guys, you know, we have just to excuse you all for a moment. Let's interrupt here. We have another caller. We have State Representative Dario Melton on the line, and we're going to welcome him to this conversation.
Hi, Representative.
Hey, everybody.
Hey,
Dario. To get on. Hey, Sogo, Miss Rayford, and my favorite Councilwoman, Benjamin.
My favorite Representative.
She's my favorite, too.
Thank y'all so much.
Glad to be able to join you all on the call. Just getting out of Bible study, so I apologize for my tardiness.
Well, amen. Did you have an opportunity to see the movie?
I have. I saw it this past Friday.
Okay,
and
what did you think? Give us, you know, I ask all of our guests tonight, that's the first question I'm asking everybody, what did you think of the movie?
I think for those of us who grew up in Selma and who are very familiar with Selma, the movie does not portray the totality of the spirit of the movement, although it is very educational for those who don't have a clue on what has happened. Of course, the movie can't display everything that transpired in a two-hour spot, but
right.
I think a lot of people are encouraged and motivated and excited to know the impact that Selma has had on this entire nation, and not just the nation, I think the world over.
Right.
For me, Selma is the birthplace of democracy. You know, democracy didn't take place until over 50 years ago here in Selma. And so I think we have impacted not just the nation, but the entire world. And I think this movie is portraying the impact that this small city has had on the world.
Yeah, and speaking of that, this is the 50th anniversary of that movement. And there will be celebrations and commemorations going on. The Jubilee is in March. And they're expecting and anticipating a great turnout of local people and visitors for this commemoration, for this 50th anniversary. And all month, Oprah has been running specials on Selma and that period. So it has, you know, guys, in my career, I've worked for the same company for 16 years. Now, it'll be 16 years in April. And every day, you know, different movie titles come across my desk in the production for those shows. And until now, they have just, it's just been work. You know, I'm particularly dispassionate about movies. Movies are just movies, you know. And when I look down the list of pending movie releases and see the name Selma, it is an incredible feeling. It is an incredible feeling.
Right.
And in the 16 years I've been with this company, I have never just been so attached or tuned in to
right.
a title before. You know, they come and they go, we release them, and, you know, we set up production, releases, distributed the titles
right.
all over the country, the world, and it's never personal. But every day I go to work now and I see Selma on my production schedule, and I'm just like, that's huge. So you guys, you know, I had to use that position, if you will, and reach out to some people for favors and have the official movie poster sent to my office to hang in my office. I had to have it. I was like, send me one.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it has been great. So
I found myself grabbing the people as they left.
Go ahead, Togo.
I'm sorry. I found myself grabbing the people as they left out of the movie theater and in the parking lot. I'm from Selma. You got any questions? Do you have any questions?
Right.
Let me tell you why this was critical and emphasizing
right.
the point. I was like the ambassador in the movie theater.
Right. So, Togo, that was my concern going in because, you know, I've developed family that's from there, you know, and my concern, and I'd like to remind people, as the councilman and woman and lady are on the phone, is they talked about being factual and things that were in it because we have to remember that it is a movie. And, you know, these movies need to make money. So there's going to be some moments in the epic that is glorified and, you know what I'm saying, that's sensationalized. But my concern was that it was factual because I knew that I would have to represent and not only own up to and folks will hold me accountable because I know the facts from knowing you people live Selma. I'm out here in California. And unless it's going to be a movie on the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, I'm detached from that.
Right.
You live that daily. You cross that bridge daily. So they had to come with it. So my issue was making sure that movie was factual and that people who knew nothing about it weren't, you know, breathing in a bunch of, you know, put in your own adjective.
Right. So... this is what I would like to, and I know with the 50th anniversary, we are on the eve of that. From Representative Melton and Councilwoman Benjamin, as it pertains to Selma, what and the state of Selma today, what do you anticipate for the future? What are you hoping for? If anything at all, and maybe you're not, with this publicity that the city is enjoying, with the pending visitors that will be in the area, what positivity can we hope to see gained here?
Well, for me, just watching Selma create this whole world stage of sort of a there's a rap session going on. There's a Q&A going on the world stage now. People are now talking again, and some are talking for the very first time about what happened here and the catalyst of it all concerning Selma and its role in the world. I'm not religious, but I'm a God-fearing woman. I'm not religious at all. But I do believe that when so many things are fighting against you, there is something around the corner that you need to fight for, whether you see it or whether you do not. Selma has so many things fighting against it, y'all. And this world stage rap session that's going on now, I think is it may not even be the beginning. We may be in the middle of that thing, whatever that thing is to happen for Selma, that God has to break these strongholds down and all of that. I think it's coming. It's on the way. Young people are now talking in ways that they have not talked before because of this whole movie thing. This coming Saturday is exclusively for them, certain showings for them, because they want them to continue this talk. And so after the movie screenings, they'll have Q&As. You know, in my mind, every great movement almost was spawned by young people, inspired by young people. And so now they're inspired, they're motivated, and as Dr. King said in the movie itself, maybe they're getting ready to demonstrate
right.
what it is that they think for Selma. The other thing that has happened is that young people who are returning home for the 50th, they're not just returning to the Jubilee to get some good food and all those kinds of things. They want to know now, how can I help? Can I do a workshop? What can I do in the community while I'm here? Can I start the first annual this or the first annual that? That is actually going on, and we're trying to find space now for people in that 30 to 40 age bracket. They want to come
right.
Here and do something. They don't just want to attend the Jubilee now. They
right.
want to put their hands in the dirt of Selma, Alabama, the place where they were born and raised and probably vowed not to return to, some of them. Now it's different. I just really can't explain what I'm trying to convey here, but it's just different this year. It's different.
Right.
Nice. So Representative Melton, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
Okay, any thoughts on the state of Selma? Was, you know, the state of Alabama? I know you're a state representative. I know I know you have a bigger focus sometimes.
Well, you know, with so much going on, we hear, you know, people always invoke the name of Selma. Elected officials always invoke the name of Selma, be it Democratic, be it Republicans. I think it's time for elected officials on the state and local level to really pay attention to Selma in regards to rebuilding the walls. Selma, in my personal opinion, is a reflection of an entire nation. As Selma goes, so the nation goes.
Powerful,
so, like, you know, we have a president in office right now who even in his inauguration, he invokes the name of Selma. I think it's time for us to utilize those relationships and try to get more federal resources in this area to rebuild the walls of Selma. You know, I see young people, they're excited about the movie and what has transpired in this area, which is a good thing, and I think we need to continue to feed off that. Don't let this movie just be the end of it, but let us be a beginning of another movement. You know, let's not just focus on what happened in 65. I'm looking forward to what Selma is going to look like over the next 25 years.
Absolutely.
A premier city for the state of Alabama, which I think will possibly be coming. It's not based off population, but we need to be a city that everybody else want to mimic because of the transformation that's taking place here in Selma. But I believe what great struggle is, there will always be great need for progress. And so, you know, whatever is going on in the city now, you know, you have a lot of outsiders, they talk about Selma and saying that how things used to be. But understand that the black leadership we have in Selma now, we only had this leadership over the last 16 years. Selma's been around for 200 years. So don't criticize leadership that's just only been in place for 16 years. First off, someone who's been in leadership over 160-some years. And so it takes time to get to the place where we need to be. You know, all of us work together. You know, people have their differences politically, locally, but at the same time, everywhere I want to see this city move forward. And I think it would be very it would be a great showing from our governor Bentley, to even come here to Selma to be a part of this 50-year Jubilee. To my knowledge, the governor has yet to participate in a Jubilee event, which speaks volumes to me personally. And that's a whole other conversation. The movement here, the whole movement now in Selma, and which you all should know, the voting rights movement started here in Selma. I'm working on legislation right now to expand that. Electronic registration is a bill that I have beside the House of Representatives. Electronic
very
voting,
good, very good.
That I have out there, mail-in voting, and as well as early voting, a whole package to try to expand democracy. Of course, there's a lot of resistance there, but we're used to resistance in Selma, so that's something that we're willing to
Amen.
Fight and battle. So I know you all asked for all of that, but that's a whole lot of work to be done, and I'm excited about the work that we got before.
Amen. Very good.
Toko, any thoughts on Selma and future endeavors?
Yeah, well, from a Selma Toro's perspective with the baseball team, you know, I have several members in the ownership group that live outside, and particularly those in Atlanta were down. Danny Amos and his wife Stacy were down in Tampa visiting us over the New Year's holiday, me and my wife, and they challenged us, you know, what about the future? What about the future for Selma? What can the Toros do to be a part of the future? And what we threw some statistics out there. On Major League Baseball rosters last year, there were 5% African Americans. At historically black colleges and universities, there were 7% African Americans baseball players last year. So what we want to do is showcase, while we don't discriminate, of course, we want to showcase our African-American baseball players and say that if you want to be seen by scouts, if you want to be seen by colleges, you come through Selma and let Selma be an avenue. Major League Baseball has tried the RBI program with some success, but we want to be another avenue that our student athletes can get some visibility. So around the Jubilee time, we're going to have a showcase, a player showcase, and invite some scouts in to see our players.
That, you know, when you first reached out to me and said, you know, we're going to have this team, this baseball team in Selma, and I'm like, I really, honestly, I couldn't comprehend it. You know, and Angela, the councilwoman, Benjamin, she touched on something a moment ago. She was like, you know, people that want to come home and get their hands in the dirt in Selma, people that don't live there anymore and probably vow to never come back. I was like, ooh, did somebody just touch me? Did somebody just step on my tail and make me bark, you know? Because I've always had such a polarizing feeling about Selma. And what I mean about that, I've had this love-hate relationship with Selma for so long. I wasn't born there. I was born in Detroit. And moving to Selma at school aged, I just could not perceive it as home. And so I went through my school years vowing to leave Selma as soon as possible, as soon as at my earliest opportunity. And I did, and I went back to Detroit. And I have not lived, have not been a Selma resident since then. But it was at some point after leaving Selma that I realized, and this was long before the movie, long before anything that's happening right now happened, but at some point after leaving Selma, I realized that Selma was home. It is truly home.
Wow.
Home. If home is where your heart is, then Selma is my home.
Okay.
And it is such, Dario, you touched on it. So goes Selma, so goes the nation, the world. It is a powerful little place. That gave life to some phenomenal people, to some awesome pioneers, male and female. Dr. Reese, there are photos where you will see Dr. Reese. He's in pictures with Dr. King, but there are also pictures that people don't know about where they were lined up at the courthouse fighting for the right to vote, standing in lines out there trying to get registered to vote long before Dr. King showed up on the scene. And
that's
he
right.
was actually the principal at the high school when I was in high school. He was my high school principal. And I mean, the history is so, so rich and so relative. You know, if you want to talk about Ferguson, let's talk about Ferguson. If you want to talk about the protests in New York, let's talk about, if you want to talk about movements anywhere in the world, you have to reach back and turn around and take a look at Selma.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that should touch every person about this movie and about how it's portrayed is that it wasn't perfect. They didn't have all the answers. They just had the courage to go forward. You know, whether it was Abernathy, whether it was King, whether it was Orange, whether it was Cooper, these people, SNCC, they did not have the answers. They just had the courage. And sometimes leadership, that's what it has to be about. You don't always know what's next, but you do know that you have to do something, that something has to change in your situation.
Amen.
So that is what resonates with me.
One thing about movements, and we talk about the Ferguson movement and the current movement, because it's indeed a national movement. Movements have to have vision. Those who are the leaders or the appointed leaders, the accepted leaders of movements have to have a vision and look and see what's going to happen in the future, what's going to happen to these people who are out here marching on behalf of this movement. They have to have some concern and care for them. And I'm not saying it's one person or, you know, the collective body has to be conscious of the welfare of those who are involved in the movement. And that's one thing that I like about the movie, because you saw that discussion taking place. And, you know, with Ferguson and with the marches in New York and the marches around nationally, I'm sure those discussions were held in the background. But without having our feet on the ground, you know, we wonder, you know, what's the end result? What happens now that the cameras aren't there? What happens next? You know, who's educating them? There is a way. You know, the studies of Mahatma Gandhi, peaceful demonstration, peaceful protest. There is a way to do it in a democratic society where you do get the attention. And Dario, that's why I'm glad to hear you speak of voter registration, because voter registration is a key in our society.
So, you know, Togo, before we go on, I think we have a caller, Glenda from Atlanta. Is she still with us?
Yes, she is. She is with
Hello?
Us.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. So good to
hear you.
How you
doing?
Tonight. I'm good.
Great.
You.
Welcome
Thank
to the conversation.
So much. Thank you. I know, right? You know, and it's like, it's so exciting because, you know, my son is 13 and he wasn't born in Selma. He was born, you know, he was raised in D.C. and Maryland. And every time we go to Selma, he's only gone, you know, he goes once or twice every year because, you know, I was active duty, so we're always away. But he always wondered why I would say, take a picture of the bridge, Chris, take a picture of the bridge when we cross. He knew the story behind it, but until he saw the movie, and I didn't cry in the movie, because if I had cried, he would have, like, paid attention to me more than the movie. So I held back the tears, and I would turn around in my seat, you know, so he couldn't see me, but he was just like, Mom, how are these people so brave? And where did they get all that courage from? He said, because even being my age now, he said, Mom, I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could fight like that. He was just so overwhelmed and just can't understand how people now, like the kids now, don't appreciate it. He was like, Mom, what if we had to fight like that again? Who would fight for us? You know, that's the question that he asked me. Who would fight for us? Because people don't care. And it was just so amazing. And it's like he understands now why I always say Christopher, just, you know, when we go across this bridge, I get so emotional. Every single time I go home and I'm leaving home, I just get so emotional. And now he understands why.
Right.
So I was so happy that he was in the movie that night. And there was other kids there. And he was like, he said, Mom, I finally understand.
You know, Glenda, it's interesting to me, you know, so that so many people don't know anything about Selma or that movement, and how it's impactful to the rights there that they enjoy today. And that is the part that I get excited about.
Yes. He is so excited about voting. He is so ready to vote.
Yes.
You know.
I love it.
He goes to me to stand in line when I go to vote. And he was like, I can't wait for my turn. And he was like, well, how do you read about the people that's running for this office? And I said, you have to keep up with what's going on in your community. And he's like so excited to be 18 to vote. And I want that from him. I need that from him, because what about the next generation? Who's going to teach them?
Right. You know, guys, that's what I got excited about. Being from Selma, you know, in most of the country, kids get excited about being 15 and getting their permit and being 16 and getting their driver's license. In Selma, you got excited about 18. You wanted to register to vote. You got excited about that I got my voter registration card. It was a big deal to turn 18 in Selma.
Yes, ma'am. And my with my kids, I have two girls, two boys. So there's one left. I told you all about my 13-year-old. So it'll be his turn next. But you know how you get your kids memorabilia when they turn 18 because they're getting ready to graduate or they've graduated, and you give them memory books and everything. Well, one of their gifts when they turn 18 has been for me all three of the older ones. They all got, in addition to their little birthday gifts, they all got a registration card in a nice little bag with tissue coming out of it. It was a gift. And
yes,
that was an exciting, exciting time to sit down, fill it out, excuse me, and take it downtown. Not mail it, take it downtown.
Right.
I can't wait. Oh, my God, I can't wait. That is going to be so overwhelming. And he'll be, you know, God willing, 18, he'll be already starting college. But I just want to be there at that moment, you know, when he does all of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Guys, listen, this has been an awesome conversation. The round table last night with the Sisters of Selma, then the discussion tonight. I want to thank all of you for taking the time out to listen out there, to interview, even if you're only sharing your thoughts in your head. I'm glad. I feel the vibrations. And for those of you that picked up the phone and called in to talk to us, thank you, thank you, thank you. Councilwoman Benjamin, and
yes,
State Representative Melton, I know you are busy people, but I thank you for joining Tiki and Took inside the Cafe Mahogany to talk about Selma.
Thank you.
And Togo, my, you know, awesome producer,
well,
as always.
Thank you.
Glenda, homegirl, thank you for calling in.
Yes.
And
you know,
sharing
I'm a
Chris's views. You know, I am a fan of Chris. I'm a fan of your son, so that is in keeping with my good taste. I'm so proud
yes.
of him.
Yes. It's like he's been here before.
It's like he's been here before. So thank you all for joining us for another segment inside the in the cafe. To my wonderful co-host, Took, thank you for seeing the movie man out there in San Francisco.
Yes. All right.
You know you know you and I are going to talk about it.
Oh, most definitely. We gonna take this to another level, but that'll be off the air. But I look forward to it, and I thank everyone for tuning in, and everybody that's been texting me trying to get in. I apologize we weren't able to get to all the phone calls tonight, but make sure
right.
you tune in next week. And it's all right next week, regardless of what the topic is. If you want to get your Selma in, get it in. See you next week.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thank you all, and join us next week for another edition of the Cafe Mahogany.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Time tribulation, but I know God. Satan wanna put me in a bow tie. Pray that the holy water don't go dry, yeah, yeah. As I look around me, so many motherfuckers wanna tell me. Well, some people never drown me. In front of a dirty double mirror, they tell me. And I love myself. The world is a ghetto, they do as a chicken. I love myself. I can do whatever I want with everyone at home.
Are you a business owner looking to expand your business nationally? Well, join the hottest internet radio network, Team Broadcasting. Advertise your business or organization on this program or others. Choose from a winning lineup: Selma Toro's Baseball, Toro Talk, Bridging the Gap, The Lonely Hearts Cafe, and Cafe Mahogany. We look forward to partnering with your business to help you grow, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally. Contact us for more information, 334-505-1940, or send us an email at yourteambroadcasting.com. 334-505-1940 or yourteambroadcasting.com. We look forward to partnering with you.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, TCN Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
You are listening to Team Broadcasting.